A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars Tatooine Ghost by Troy Denny. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. Leia Organa, newly Leia Organa Solo, sat behind Han and Chewbacca on the flight deck of the Millennium Falcon. The twin sons of the Tattoo system were hanging outside the forward viewport, a pair of white eyes blazing up from the black well of space. Like all twins, they were bound together by a tie as unpredictable as it was powerful. Sometimes the bond boosted their luminosity far beyond that of two normal suns. At other times, it sent waves of ionic discharge pulsing across space to scramble circuits and reorient core relative compasses. Today, the twins were assailing the Falcon with electromagnetic blast, overloading her sensors and filling the cockpit speakers with static. As Chewbacca worked to raise the proper filters, the static faded from a roar to a crackle, then softened to a hiss, which rose and fell in a sharp rhythm. Puzzled by the odd, snickering sound, Leia glanced over at the Master Comm console and found the reception indicator still scanning for signals. Han, do you hear? No sound came from her mouth. The snicker became a deep chuckle, and the nebula of black gas began to gather in front of the Falcon. Han showed no reaction to it, neither did Chewbacca, even when it coalesced into the cowl of a Jedi cloak. Han, don't you see? Again, her voice made no sound. Glaring out from beneath the cowl, the twin suns looked more than ever like eyes, heartless eyes, full of malice and power lust. The mouth rose at the corners.
Mine.
The voice was cruel and distinct and rife with dark side power. The smile became a sneer.
Mine.
Still, neither Han nor Chewbacca seemed to notice what was happening. The nebula began to thicken, and the purple wrinkles faded behind its inky veil. The twin suns dimmed to darkness, and the black cloud assumed the shape of a familiar mask, a mask of harsh angles and obsidian sheen, framed by the long, flaring neck apron of an equally black helmet. Vader's helmet. A chill wave of nausea washed over Leia. The curved eye lenses grew transparent, but instead of the blazing brightness of Tatooine's twin suns or the angry red-rimmed gaze of Darth Vader, she found herself looking into her brother's soft blue eyes. Luke, what are you... Her question remained as silent as the other she had asked. Luke locked gazes and held her transfixed for what might have been seconds or minutes, his eyes now the lifeless blue of ice. Leia grew cold and frightened, and the mask dissolved back into the black nothingness of space, leaving her to stare out once again into the mind-stabbing brilliance of the Tattoo System's twin suns. Instead of bed, where she usually awoke from her dreams, Leia found herself slumped forward in her crash webbing, ears hissing with static and eyes aching from the glare of two G-class suns. Han and Chewbacca were still busy at their stations, Han plotting approach vectors and Chewbacca setting sensor filters. The planet Tatooine was just drifting into view, its yellow sodium-rich sands glowing so brightly it resembled a small sibling star in orbit around the big twins. A metallic hand tapped Leia's shoulder. She turned to see C-3PO's photoreceptors shining at her from the adjacent passenger seat.
Pardon me for asking, Princess Leia, but are you well?
Don't I look well?
Oh, dear. Why, yes, you do look as splendid as ever, but it seemed for a moment as though you might have overloaded your primary circuits.
My circuits are fine. I'll need to confirm that later. Han twisted around and glanced over his seat, with the same crooked smile that had alternately charmed and worried Leia since their first meeting on the Death Star. Princess? Oh, really? Leia straightened herself in her chair without fully realizing she was doing it. And you think you can read my schematics? Sweetheart, I know your schematics by heart. Han's smile faded, and his expression grew concerned. 3PO's right. You look like you've seen a ghost. Something like that. A bad dream. Han regarded her a moment longer, then shrugged. Until the sensors come up, we need to keep an eye out for other traffic. Leia gazed out the canopy and began to search for the rapidly swelling silhouette of blocked starlight. That would mean an approaching vessel. Her thoughts remained focused on the strange dream. It had a similar feel to the Force vision she had experienced nearly 5 years earlier at Bakura, when her father had sent an apparition begging for the forgiveness she would never, could never, grant. Han's hand rose into view between the pilot and co-pilot seats, pointing toward a blocky silhouette floating some distance to one side of Tatooine's yellow disk. "That's too square to be a moon," Han said. "How about those filters, Chewie?" An impatient rumble suggested that the Wookiee was still struggling with the filters. Anyone else might have been frightened, but Leia found the groan reassuring, a touch of the familiar in a time of shifting alliances and random annihilation. When she had married Han 6 months ago, she had known Chewbacca would be an honorary member of their family, and that was fine with her. The comm hiss finally fell silent as Chewbacca found the right combination of filters. He brought the sensors up, fiddled a moment longer, then let out a startled rumph. "The mass calibration is off," Han said. "That reads like a Star Destroyer." Chewbacca oorawled indignantly, then sent the data readout to the auxiliary display beside Leia's seat and glanced back for her affirmation. She had to look only a second to see that he was correct. 1,600 meters, 6 comm bands in use, and a TIE squadron circling on station, Leia said, feeling a little sick and worried. "I don't know, Han. The mass calibration looks fine to me." As she spoke, the Falcon's computer found a profile match in its military data banks and displayed the schematic of an Imperial-class Star Destroyer. Below the image appeared the vessel's name. "The Chimera," Han read. "Isn't she still in service to the Empire?" As of 2 months ago, she was one of their most efficient destroyers. Leia did not need to look up the information. The death of Warlord Zinji 8 months earlier had emboldened the Imperial fleet, and the Provisional Council had been mired in war minutiae ever since. Admiral Akbar has been wondering what became of her. Deserters? Han caught her eye in the canopy reflection. Another captain wanting to set himself up as a warlord? Please, no. The situation out here is already too confused. With the New Republic battling the Imperials over the scraps of Zinji's empire, and the surviving warlords exploiting the war to enlarge their own territories, confused was an understatement. And the Chimera's commander isn't the type. By all accounts, Gilad Pellion is both loyal and competent. "Chewie, I can handle this, no problem." Han looked vaguely insulted. "It's only one little Star Destroyer." Chewbacca grunted doubtfully, then added a yawl about the folly of tempting fate for a piece of art. "Killick Twilight means a lot to Leia," Han said. "It hung in the palace on Alderaan." Chewbacca growled a long question that suggested they might be flying into a trap. The painting might not even be real. "You can't forge moss paintings," Leia answered. "Not anymore. They require strains that don't spread or reproduce, the cultivation of which was a closely guarded secret even in Alderaan. That secret died with the rest of Alderaan." "You see?" Han asked. "Besides, if the Imperials were trying to lure Leia to Tatooine, they wouldn't leave their Star Destroyer out in the open like that." Han pointed at the tiny silhouette of the Chimera, which had started an edgeward drift across the canopy as the Falcon eased past it toward the planet. Chewbacca reiterated the questions that had been troubling them all since learning of the auction. Why was such a valuable painting being sold in a seedy spaceport like Mos Espa? Where had it been all these years? Why was it surfacing now? The answers were a mystery, as much a mystery as the Star Destroyer's appearance here. At the time of Alderaan's destruction, Killick Twilight had been returning home from a museum loan on Coruscant. It had dropped out of sight, and Leia had believed the painting destroyed with her home. At least, until Lando Calrissian reported that it would soon be offered at auction on Tatooine. Chewbacca continued to press his case, maintaining that the Chimera's presence was no coincidence. With an Imperial Star Destroyer hanging off Tatooine, there would almost certainly be Imperials at the auction. She leaned forward and grasped the Wookiee's shoulder, and his tirade rumbled to an end. Chewie, everything you say makes sense. The Star Destroyer worries me, too. If this were just any piece of Alderaanian art, I wouldn't ask you to take the risk. But for Killick Twilight, I must. Chewbacca studied her in the canopy reflection. Leia held Chewbacca's gaze with a sober expression that came to her face all too readily these days. Finally, he rumped softly and nodded. Han glanced over, his jaw dropped in disbelief.
That's it? She says must, and you don't even want to know why?
Chewbacca shrugged.
But you'll argue with me.
Han glanced at Leia's reflection in the canopy.
Those are some powers of persuasion you have there, Princess. You've been studying with Luke when I'm not looking.
I'm no Jedi, Leia said. Just your common, everyday princess.
There's nothing common or everyday about you,
Han replied in a tone so cloying that it made Chewbacca groan.
Or your hidden agendas.
Hidden agendas? Leia cringed inwardly as she vacillated between sounding innocent and playful and came off as neither. We're just here to buy a moss painting.
Yeah?
Han's eyes assumed an amused twinkle. Han, we need to be at that auction, she said. If Killick Twilight is down there, we have to buy it. Thousands of New Republic lives depend on it.
Really?
Han did not look at all surprised. Leia took a deep breath, then said, There's a shadow cast code key hidden in the painting, in the moisture control circuitry. Chewbacca's eyes grew as round as bubbles. Shadowcast was a secret communications network that had sent rebel messages encrypted within the commercial advertisements that paid for Imperial propaganda programming via the HoloNet. The system remained undiscovered, and the New Republic still used it to send instructions deep behind Imperial lines to its most delicately placed spies. Chewbacca yawled a warning, and Leia looked over at the auxiliary display to find an assault shuttle and three TIEs departing the Chimera.
Nothing to worry about, Han said, studying his own display. They just want to see if we get nervous.
Chewbacca reported that the shuttle and TIEs were approaching on an intercept vector. Han adjusted the Falcon's course enough to keep their line of escape open, then looked back at Leia.
I don't see why this code key's so important anyway, Han continued. They must have updated it by now. It's 10 years old.
9 years old, Leia corrected. And the code is updated every sixth broadcast. But even an old key would help the Imperials break the new codes. Worse, it would alert them to the existence of a network they haven't detected in nearly a decade. It would cost the lives of thousands of former agents still living on enemy worlds. Han looked away, his gaze dropping to his instruments, and Leia knew she had him. He would play hard to get, pretending to think it over. But Han Solo always came through when it counted. That was his weakness, and she loved him for it. Chewbacca reported that the TIEs were starting to accelerate ahead of the assault shuttle. Han nudged the Falcon's nose back toward Tatooine, angling for the planet horizon, where the twin suns were casting a crescent of white brilliance.
CEC transport Regina Gallus,
a gruff Imperial voice said.
Maintain position and stand by for inspection.
Regina Gallus was one of a dozen false transponder codes the Falcon used when traveling anonymously. Han turned to C-3PO.
You're on, Goldenrod.
C-3PO tipped his head.
On, Master Solo?
Stall.
Han pointed to the microphone above the auxiliary navicomputer interface.
Regina Gallus,
a smoother voice said.
This is the Star Destroyer Chimera. Stand by for boarding, or we will open fire.
3PO? Leia pointed at the comm unit.
C-3PO activated the transmitter and used his vocabulator to emit a staccato burst of drones and clicks. There was a long pause while the Imperial summoned a translator droid. Han smiled, satisfied, and rose from the pilot's chair.
You know what to do, Chewie.
Han reached past C-3PO's shoulder and linked the comm speakers to the Falcon's intercom, then motioned for Leia to join him.
I'll need you in back with me, he said.
Leia unbuckled her crash webbing, her heart rising into her throat.
Han, I don't know if shooting our way out of this. Do I look like a Gundark? He asked. If we shoot, we're dead.
Happy to know they agreed, Leia followed him down the access to the rear hold. By the time they opened the hatch, the Imperials were back on the channel with their translator droid, and it was conversing with C-3PO in a cacophony of buzzes and clacks. Han retrieved a small cargo pod, then took it into the main ring corridor and opened one of the smuggling compartments in the floor. He began to extract the cases of fine Chandralan brandy that he kept to pay off spaceport masters, passing them to Leia to stow in the cargo pod. What are we going to do? Bomb them with intoxicants?
You might say that, Han said. It's called bribe on the run. This stuff is good currency, especially to a junior officer who probably hasn't seen a payment voucher in months.
Han, didn't you hear what I said about Pelion? Leia asked. He won't go for that.
Han smiled. He won't have to.
By the time he explained the details to Leia, the cargo pod was loaded, and the Chimera's officer was back on the comm channel, sounding as irritated as only C-3PO could make a sentient. Leia nearly fell as Chewbacca suddenly decelerated and started what felt like a turn back toward the Chimera. She knew it was really a maneuver to put the assault shuttle between them and the Star Destroyer's powerful turbo lasers. Han and Chewbacca had been running Imperial checkpoints since before there was a rebellion. They knew every smuggler's trick in the databanks, and a few more. Han and Leia sealed the pod and ejected it through the airlock. When they returned to the engineering station in the main hold and brought the tactical array up on the display, Chewbacca had already brought the Falcon around and was accelerating away, with the assault shuttle now squarely between them and the Chimera. The officer began to yell,
"Halt! Halt or we'll open fire!"
Chewbacca closed the channel and continued to accelerate. Unable to make good on the officer's threats without risking her own assault shuttle, the Chimera held her fire. The Falcon's new bearing ran roughly parallel to Tatooine's surface instead of toward it.
Good, Han said. They think we're just spice runners. They'll stop to collect our jettisoned cargo and then we're home free. The boarding officer won't want prisoners around to tell Pelion what was really in the pod.
You're sure about that? Leia watched with growing alarm as the three Ties passed the cargo pod, now angling to put themselves between Tatooine and their quarry. They don't look all that interested in a bribe. Han studied the display, his jaw falling a little more with each kilometer the Ties put between themselves and the ejected cargo. For a moment it looked as though the assault shuttle would also ignore the pod and stay behind the Falcon. Then a tractor beam activated in its stern, and it veered toward the bribe. Han sighed in relief, but grabbed Leia's hand and started for the laser cannon access tunnel.
Come on.
Han, what happened to no shooting? If we shoot, we're dead. You said that. I remember.
I say a lot of things. But they're trying to grab the pod on the fly. The boarding officer needs us to make this look good, or his commander won't buy our escape.
How good?
Good. That Pelion must be a real stickler.
The Falcon shuddered as Han test-fired his weapons.
Just don't hit anything. Hit something and we're dead.
Leia buckled herself into the firing seat.
I know.
The canopy dimmed against the sapphire flash of an incoming turbo laser strike, and Leia's pulse stopped.
What was that? Leia gasped.
They blasted it! Han cried. The brandy alone was 2,000 credits.
It does eliminate our bribery plan. Han answered by laying a wall of laser bolts in front of the Ties.
The shuttle we can outrun, he said. But we need to check those fighters. Just don't hit anything.
Leia activated her rangefinder.
I know.
The quad laser cannons fired in diametric sequence to minimize discharge shutter. Even so, the turret shook. Leia checked her sights, found the interceptor still trying to cut them off, and fired again. The TIEs opened fire, and tiny lances of green light stabbed out of Tatooine's yellow glow. Han's laser cannons began to stitch space alongside the TIEs. Leia followed his lead, and they forced the trio back toward the Star Destroyer. The image on her targeting display switched to true size, and the interceptors became thumb-sized blurs coming dead on. Chewbacca continued ahead, keeping the assault shuttle between the Falcon's tail and the Chimera's guns. They were going to make it, Leia saw. Once Leia and Han forced the TIEs into the Falcon's rear quarter, Chewbacca would hide behind them and dive into Tatooine's atmosphere, and the Chimera's big guns would be useless. Unless Pelion cared to attack a whole planet to stop one vessel. The TIEs kept closing, swelling to the size of fists in Leia's display. She grew bolder, timing her shots to seize the area vacated by their dodges, forcing the interceptors to slip farther into the Falcon's rear quarter with each swing. Then the blast tinting went black, though not quickly enough to spare Leia a moment of flash blindness, as another turbo laser strike, this one much closer than first, erupted. Her shoulders hit crash webbing as the shockwave bucked the Falcon. She did not realize she was still holding her triggers open until the synthetic rumble of the targeting computer announced the destruction of a TIE interceptor. Leia cursed and released the triggers, struggling to blink the blast dazzle from her eyes and not quite able to believe they had survived the strike.
Sorry, I didn't mean...
The Chimera hit it? Leia gasped.
By mistake?
To make a point. Han's laser cannons opened up again. She didn't like her TIEs being pushed around. Leia checked her display and found the last two interceptors weaving wildly as they rushed for the Falcon's forward quarter. She swung her turret around, but was too distracted to open fire safely. Something here did not make sense. Pelion would never destroy his own interceptor, she said. The Empire is too short of good fighters. A lesson the survivors will never forget. Han's cannon bolts were dancing around the lead TIE in a tightening web of light. If there are any. Finally, the interceptor had no place left to maneuver and flew into a dash of laser energy, exploding in a white cloud of fire and light. He's using us as a training mission. I hate that. Han, you said don't hit. Change of plans. Han began to fire at the last TIE. Now we make it cost them. Leia joined in, forcing the TIE into Han's stream of fire. The pilot broke high, his wings and spherical cockpit rotating so smoothly that Leia did not realize he had changed attitude until the cannon bolt stopped coming.
He's yours, Han yelled over the intercom. Roll me up, Chewie.
Leia raised her cannons and thumbed the automatic lead active, but the TIE was already too far ahead. She managed only a few more shots before the computer designated it out of range.
That's it. He's been recalled, Han said. They aren't going to give us any more trouble.
Leia checked the tactical display and saw the assault shuttle still trailing them. No match for the Falcon's speed, it was out of range and steadily falling farther behind, but it was coming.
You're sure about that? Leia asked.
As Leia spoke, the shuttle broke off pursuit and angled for the planet. Chewbacca was quick to parallel its course, keeping the shuttle between them and the Star Destroyer, now traveling more or less in the direction they wanted to go. Leia swung her turret around, unsure whether she should thank the shuttle pilot or open fire. Han figured it out before she did.
Chewie, cut behind them! Go sandside, fast!
Chewbacca didn't ask why. He brought the Falcon around so sharply that Leia had to close her eyes against the star spin, and then Han began yelling to bring her guns to bear. Leia opened her eyes again and wished she hadn't. Space was flying past the canopy in a flashing whirl of stars and sand as Chewbacca spiraled toward Tatooine. Half a dozen blips appeared at the edge of the tactical screen, and her heart had barely finished falling
before the interceptor symbols confirmed what Han had realized 2 moments before. Another flight of TIEs was coming fast from the blind side of the planet. Leia forced her attention back to the firing display. I have a lock. Noticing that Han had not yet opened fire, she asked, Should I? Not yet, Han said. Chewie, see that sandstorm? The really big one? An affirming grunt came over the intercom. The Falcon shuddered and slowed abruptly. Leia wondered if they could have reached the outer edge of the atmosphere so soon, but there was still too much darkness outside. Then Han was cursing and asking no one in particular if all the Chimera's pilots had a death wish, and she saw the assault shuttle tumbling around the tactical display like a flitnat, connected to the Falcon by the invisible ribbon of a tractor beam that was pulling the two vessels slowly, steadily closer.
Chewie, launch the...
A soft thud reverberated through the Falcon as 2 concussion missiles shot from their tubes, riding the tractor beam toward the shuttle.
Now, sweetheart.
Leia squeezed the triggers. The centering of the targeting display erupted into a dazzling glow, and her canopy darkened to black as the shuttle returned fire. Then the missiles vanished into the glow. The tractor beam twinkled out of existence, and the brightness behind the crosshairs dissolved into a fading starburst. Chewbacca wrenched the Falcon out of her tumble and dived straight for Tatooine. Leia brought her turret around and finally found the sandstorm Han had pointed out to Chewbacca. A raging swirl of amber that covered a tenth of the planet's visible surface. Chewbacca sent the Falcon corkscrewing into a new helix of evasion. Leia checked her tactical display and found the TIE still out of range and likely to stay that way. There was only one thing the Star Destroyer could do to block the Falcon. A bright line of turbo laser strikes erupted ahead, trying not to hit the Falcon, but the forcer toward the approaching TIEs. Chewbacca flew directly at the nearest Blossom. The shields crackled with sapphire energy as they passed through the dissipation turbulence. Then the Falcon was plunging into Tatooine's atmosphere, bucking wildly and engulfed in entry flame. A yellow cloud of wind-borne sand howled through the streets of Mos Espa, etching goggle lenses with microscopic scratch marks and transforming the city into a warren of dome-shaped silhouettes. The squall was the dying remnant of the same sandstorm that had concealed the Falcon from Pelion's TIEs. So Leia should not have been surprised to see 2 stormtroopers standing in the haze ahead. But she was. After all, Han had spent half the night bumping the Falcon blindly through 2,000 kilometers of storm-filled canyons. So Pelion would not know whether the Regina Galas had survived its plunge into the sandstorm. They had hidden the ship in one of Han's former haunts, a huge but little-known smuggler's cave, 30 kilometers out in the desert. Han took her arm and guided her forward.
It's okay to hesitate. They expect that.
A small synthesizer, hidden inside his mouth, gave his speech a raspy Deveronian quality.
But don't gawk.
She looped a hand through Han's elbow and did her best to fawn up at him as they approached the armored silhouettes. Though both she and Han were well hidden beneath the cowled cloaks and face coverings necessary to travel anywhere in even a mild sand squall, Leia felt as though she was parading past the Imperials in full Alderaanian princess regalia. She and Han were 2 of the most famous faces in the New Republic, and she had no doubt that capturing, or killing, either of them would mean a hefty promotion for all those involved. If Han was nervous, she did not sense it. He strode straight for the troopers, his goggled gaze rising to the flashing sign over the door behind them.
Marbo's Performance Hall, he said. This is it.
A dance house? Leia gushed. You take me to the nicest places. Han looked at the stormtroopers pointedly. They returned his glare impassively from behind their dark lenses, then finally stepped aside. They found themselves in a large, sand-grimed foyer, where a single weequay guarded the entrance to a dingy cloakroom.
Here for the art inspection? He asked.
That's right.
Han pulled up his goggles, and Leia thought she saw a glimmer of alarm as he met the Weequay's eyes.
Killick Twilight?
The Weequay shrugged.
Morbo's got lots of stuff to auction in there.
He extended a knobby-fingered hand for their cloaks.
Leave your covers here. She don't want sand in the back.
Leia and Han stuffed their goggles and face coverings into their pockets and passed their cloaks over. With her skin dyed pale blue and a pair of prosthetic leku squirming down her back, Leia made a reasonably convincing Twi'lek consort to Han's bald, behorned, sinister-looking, and very red Deveronian. Both disguises were courtesy of New Republic intelligence, complete with retina-concealing contact lenses and false prints affixed to the pads of their fingers. So when the Weequay sniffed the cloaks, then grinned and reached out to Han with his free hand, Leia was astounded.
"Thought I recognized that jet juice you call cologne, Solo," the Weequay said.
"Jaxel,"
Han quickly added.
"Solo Jaxel, remember?"
A cold lump began to form in Leia's stomach. Weequays used scent to communicate with members of their own clan, so they were especially good at remembering smells. But the Weequay seemed to have no intention of betraying them. He merely nodded and tossed their cloaks in the pile behind him, then said,
"Jaxel, that's right. Sorry, I forgot."
"Not a problem,"
Han said.
"Good to see you again, Grunts."
"I smelled you still with that furball partner of yours. Where is he?"
"He's around," Han said.
Chewbacca and C-3PO were waiting at a local inn in a rented room. Grunts waved a hand toward a weapons locker at the back of the cloakroom.
"You're supposed to check your weapons."
"Already did,"
Han replied with a straight face.
"They're working fine."
Grunts chuckled, then said,
"Just keep them out of sight."
He turned to open the door, but Leia asked, "What are those stormtroopers doing out there, Grunts? Did Marbo hire extra security?" The Weequay looked vaguely insulted.
"They're here with two officers. I made the stormtroopers wait outside."
"Officers? What are they doing here?"
"Same as everybody else, I guess."
Grunts pulled the door open.
"They want to be sure the stuff is real before the auction starts."
He waved them into a droning chamber that could be called a performance hall only in the sense that it had a stage. Half a dozen stages, in fact. In the center of the chamber was a large main stage, and along the walls were dozens of private booths, where the sellers were displaying the pieces they would offer at auction that afternoon. As Leia studied the crowd, she leaned close to Han. "Where do you know Grunts from?"
"Long story, but he can be trusted."
"With you, everything's a long story," Leia said. "How about the short version? I need to be persuaded." Han sighed and started toward the nearest stage, where a statuesque Caudru G female with forearms, pointed ears, and a lissome build was serving drinks. The smile she flashed as they approached made Leia wonder how well she knew Han's smell. He ordered a pair of comet dusters, then, as the clamorous and passioning machine excited the molecules, leaned close to Leia's ear.
"I know, because I used to own him."
"What? You own a slave? How could you?"
"I won him from Lady Valerian in a sabacc game,"
Han said, as though that excused it.
"I set him free."
The drinks came, and the Caudru G accepted payment with a slow wink. Han's answering grin was truly lecherous, though in fairness, that may have been due more to his Deveronian disguise than what was going through his mind. Leia waited until the Caudru G was gone, then asked, "So, when did you own her?"
"Her?"
Han began making his way across the floor toward the back wall, where a couple of dozen buyers were lined up outside a well-guarded booth, waiting to inspect Killick Twilight.
"What makes you think I ever owned Celia?"
Leia knew Han was baiting her. She was doing her best not to ask how he knew Celia's name when she noticed two Imperials near the end of the line. One was dressed in the white utilities of an Imperial technician, but the other wore the gray tunic and rank bar of a full bridge commander.
They would not have sent such a high-ranking officer to track down a group of smugglers. They had come for Killick Twilight. Leia angled toward the front of the chamber, pulling Han toward a flamboyant display of Tatooine glitter glass. You saw?
You don't overlook that insignia, not if you were at the Imperial Academy, Han whispered.
They circled a satellite stage, where an Elemen female was offering stems connected to a hookah reeking of stale water. Leia said,
They know. They must.
Han did not contradict her.
I don't understand how they found out, Leia continued.
Only three of us knew, and the other two were on Alderaan when the Death Star destroyed the planet.
Your boss knows. Maybe she thought—
No. If anyone understands the importance of keeping a secret, it's her. They reached the booth with the glitter glass and pretended to examine several garish panes in a flowing organic style. A solitary Grand stepped toward the front of the booth, his three eyes gliding over Han's ostentatious robe, the mouth at the end of his long muzzle puckering into an eager grin. Leia pulled Han away, and they nearly tripped over the sellers running the next booth, a pair of furry waist-high bipeds with short muzzles and long tufted ears.
Hey, Redhorns,
the first one said, taking Han's wrist.
You look like a being who knows quality. Come see the real prize at this junk sale.
The second grabbed Leia's hand.
This way.
It pulled her toward their booth, where a third member of their group stood in front of a one-way mirror field.
Just 2 credits. You miss out on this, and you'll be sorry.
The third member reached into the booth and adjusted the mirror field opacity, allowing Leia to glimpse a disparate collection of local handicrafts, twisted columns of plasteel, and what looked like the insipid planetscapes usually found in the corridors of tourist-class nebula cruisers. Han stopped.
2 credits just to look?
He pulled loose, then reached over and freed Leia as well.
You've been spending too much time in the suns.
The little creatures blinked up at him with long-lashed eyes, so brown and deep that Leia felt instantly drawn to them.
If such a small amount concerns you, think of it as a deposit,
the first one said.
It's fully refundable when you bid on one of our items.
We won't be bidding on your stuff, okay?
Han pushed between the creatures and, drawing Leia after him, grumbled.
Squibs. They'll sell you a bucket of air if you let them. And keep the bucket.
They came to a booth filled with exquisitely colored bowls, made of some material so delicate Leia could see the shelf through the bottoms. She would have liked to stay and study the vessels with an eye toward bidding, but the press of prospective buyers made it a poor observation post, and they needed to locate the bridge commander's guards.
There's one.
Han nodded toward a hulking, short-haired human feigning interest in a worthless lump of blaster-fused sandglass.
Not too subtle, are they?
For the Empire, that is subtle, Leia said. They quickly found 2 more guards, a male-female team masquerading as a Kwati aristocrat and her Telban paramour. Then they stopped at a booth containing several pieces of refined sculpture and 6 images gleamings depicting Tatooine landscapes. Leia was particularly taken with a depiction of an approaching sand squall and an empty sandrock basin titled The Last Lake. Then she came to a single, oversized hollow cube. The image was of a sandy-haired boy of perhaps 9 or 10, standing in front of an old podracer cockpit, with a pair of goggles down around his neck and both arms raised high over his head. The joy in his grin was as contagious as it was innocent. He was clearly pretending he had just won a big race. But that was not what captured Leia's attention. There was something about those eyes that compelled her to stand there and stare, to forget the presence of Han and the vendor, and simply look. They were Luke's eyes, Leia realized. They were the same radiant blue. They had the same depth and softness as her brother's. And most of all, they had a quiet intensity that burned as brightly as the twin suns themselves. Leia saw again the white orbs that had taken the place of Luke's eyes in her dream aboard the Falcon, and she began to experience an eerie sense of connection to the boy.
But this was not Luke. This boy's cheeks were too broad, his nose too small. It was only a dream. And dreams were not the future, Leia reminded herself. They were viewports into a person's private wisdom, hints of the truths kept trapped in the mind's forgotten recesses by the twin Vornskers of fear and desire. Those eyes aboard the Falcon, Tatooine's two sons, the Tatooine boy, they were trying to tell her something. But what? For now, the explanation would have to remain a mystery, as would the reason the boy's image brought the dream so forcefully to mind. A slender, swarthy man of around 50 was approaching. With black hair and dark skin, he had an air of reserve about him that suggested good breeding, or, more likely on Tatooine, off-world training.
"It doesn't surprise me that you find this hollow so fascinating," the man said.
"Sure, I love little kids." She glanced around the booth for a sign screen identifying the hollow cube and found it on the floor, smashed and unreadable. "Especially human kids." The vendor smiled shrewdly. "Of course, but the boy in this cube is no longer a child. It was taken when he won the Bunta Eve Classic more than 40 years ago."
"Won it?"
Han scoffed.
"Look, don't think you're talking to a pair of nerf herders here. Even when pod racing was legal, humans didn't have the reflexes to survive it, much less win, and especially not as kids."
The vendor ignored Han.
"I don't want to part with it. He was my best friend. But times are hard. Still, if you'd care to strike a bargain before the auction, I'd be willing to offer it to you now."
"Yeah, I'll bet you would."
Han pulled Leia away.
"Come on, Tails."
As soon as they were out of the man's earshot, Han asked,
"So who's the kid?"
"How should I know?"
"You were sure staring at him,"
Han said.
"I didn't think you were such a fan of holography."
"I'm not. His eyes reminded me of someone."
"I don't like this,"
Han said.
"It's definitely not a good idea to draw attention to ourselves by starting a bidding war against the Empire."
He turned toward the Squibs booth.
"Han, you can't be serious. What do a bunch of overgrown pack rats know about art?"
"Nothing."
He pulled 4 credits from his robe.
"But they know auctions."
The 2 squibs in front of the mirror field gave up on the Tagorians they were harassing and watched with condescending smirks as Leia and Han approached. Han held out the hand with the credits.
"One word and we leave. Just show us the stuff."
The leader, at least Leia thought it was the leader, looked as though he was thinking of asking for more. Han put the credits back in his pocket, and the squib surprised Leia by shrugging and turning to look for another customer. Han sighed, and when he pulled his hand from his pocket, it was holding 6 credits.
"We don't have all day."
The squib's eyes brightened, and he held up 10 fingers.
7,
Han said.
"And it's not worth that much."
The squib lowered 1 finger. Han pulled 2 more credits from his pocket, so now he was holding 8. Even then, they almost had to leave before the squib finally raised his palm and motioned for the money. The squib rubbed the credits against his furred cheek, then nodded and passed them to his fellow, who did the same thing, and passed them through the mirror field. Only after the 3rd squib had inspected and approved the coins did they allow the solos into the booth. It was filled with the same collection of used handicrafts, twisted plasteel, labeled by a sign screen, found sculpture, and mawkish planetscapes Leia had glimpsed earlier. The squibs immediately began to offer items for inspection, carefully rubbing each object against their furred cheeks before attempting to press it into Han and Leia's hands. Han pushed a smashed cooling unit aside and said,
"Stop! I told you before, we're not interested in your stuff. That's not why we're here."
The leader was so shocked, he nearly dropped the chipped bone glass bowl.
"You're not?"
This drew a pair of stern shushes from his fellows.
"Don't worry," Leia said. "We want to talk. We just needed to be someplace private first."
"Talk's not cheap,"
the 2nd squib warned.
"Time is money,"
the 3rd chimed in. Han turned to Leia and rolled his eyes.
"You had to say it."
Listen, Leia said. We need you to do a job for us. The booth fell silent, and the leader turned his head aside, glaring at her out of one eye.
We don't do jobs. We're not hirelings.
We want to strike a bargain,
Han corrected.
A bargain?
The leader clasped his small hands together.
What wares?
Killick Twilight, Leia said. We want you to buy it for us.
We supply the funds, Han said quickly. You have the fun.
The squibs looked at each other, nodded, and the leader said,
Deal. But you have to buy all our stock,
the second squib added. We don't need your stock, Leia said. We don't have any place to put it.
Not our problem,
the third said.
We can get you a magnetic freight compartment. Won't even scratch your yacht. Only 1,000 extra.
How about we just pay you for your stock, Leia said, and you can still sell it at the auction.
Can't do that. You're buying it at auction. That's the deal.
Look, we don't want your stuff, Han said.
Then why are you taking the freight compartment?
We're not, Leia said.
And we're not buying at auction, Han said. We're not agreeing to that. We're not dumb enough to let you have someone run up the bidding.
So how dumb are you? Maybe just one.
No!
Han shouted. The squibs fell silent and blinked up at him in shock. Finally, he rolled his eyes and asked,
Okay, how much stock do you have?
And they were off, the squibs offering and Han and Leia counteroffering, pulling one element out of the deal and throwing two more in, the negotiation moving at the speed of sound and almost instantly growing as complex as anything Leia had seen as a New Republic diplomat. By the time they were finished, it was agreed that Han and Leia, or their designated agent, would bid on 3 items of their own choosing from each category. The maximum price to be determined by a complex formula based on bid increments, with each side being allowed 1 sleeper among the attendees. And we get the painting after you buy it, Leia said. I just want to be sure of that. All 3 nodded.
That's right,
the leader said.
As long as you hold up your end of the bargain, a deal is a deal.
Good. I'm Limba. Leia extended her hand. It's been an education doing business with you. Jaxel is right. You guys are good. The squibs puffed out their chests visibly.
You did all right,
the leader said. He rubbed his cheek across Leia's palm, then across Han's, then jerked a thumb at his chest.
I'm Grease. That's Sly.
Grease indicated the second squib, who stepped forward and rubbed his cheek over the hands of both Han and Leia.
And I'm Amala.
The third squib pressed her cheek to Leia's hand. Han waited for Amala to nuzzle his hand, then asked,
Which one's coming to see the painting? I want to be sure you know what you're bidding on.
Amala and Grease turned to Sly expectantly. Sly let out a heavy sigh.
I'll go.
He shook his head in disgust.
But when I come back, I'm out front.
They emerged from behind the mirror field to find the Imperial officers having already completed their inspection, leaving the dance house. A tangible sense of relief filled the air, and the polite murmur intensified to an electric drone. Leia, Han, and Sly took their place at the back of the line and had to wait nearly an hour before their turn came to go through the mirror field. Instead of the painting, inside, the trio found 6 of Mabo's thugs in Nylar tunics and shimmer silk capes, all holding blaster rifles trained on their prospective purchasers.
Don't worry,
a Rodian said. His cone-shaped snout twitched toward the dark corner to Leia's right, and someone came up from behind and blindfolded her.
Just a security precaution.
They were led through the back of the booth, down a long hallway, then up a lift glide into a quiet area reeking of acrid thack smoke. Their blindfolds were removed. The trio found themselves standing in a dark chamber before a section of wall illuminated by an overhead glow panel and flanked by 2 Gamorrean guards. In the middle of the wall hung the velvety rectangle of a sublimely colored Alderaanian moss painting, its moisture control apparatus, artfully concealed within an internal frame. It was smaller than Leia remembered, no more than 50 centimeters across, but even more beautiful and moving.
"Killick Twilight," a harsh female voice croaked behind Leia. "You got 2 minutes."
Leia wanted to protest that 2 minutes was not nearly enough, not after a decade of trying to keep its bold composition and subtle hues locked in her mind. She had thought it a treasure forever lost to her, and to future generations of Alderaanian descendants. And now, here it was, hanging in front of her, close enough to touch, with its stormy sky sweeping over a city of Killick pinnacles, and in the foreground, its line of enigmatic insectoid figures, the vanished race who had inhabited Alderaan before humans, turning to look back at the approaching darkness.
"You need to verify it. Go ahead," the harsh voice said. "But brush sampling only. No clipping."
"It's the real thing." Leia glanced over to find Han staring at the painting, his gaze fixed and his jaw slack with wonder. After 8 years together, it was good to know Han could still surprise her. 2.5 standard hours later, Han and Leia sat behind the mirror-filled wall of one of the performance hall's private booths, watching the main floor fill with spectators and bidders. The Imperial Watch Commander stood in front of the primary stage, where the auction would take place. His science officer companion was gone, replaced by 2 burly bodyguards in full-dress uniform. Han could see Grease, Sly, and Amala pushing through the packed performance hall, approaching likely-looking Twilight bidders on the pretext of offering them inside information on the auction merchandise. There were a few takers, and these the squibs offered a thinly disguised sales pitch for their own wares. Sometimes the buyers paid for the advice, and sometimes they didn't. But the trio never wasted more than a few moments quarreling before they moved to the next prospect. "Those squibs are good. Maybe too good," Leia said. She was sitting beside Han at the booth's plastoid cocktail table, slumped down on an overstuffed wraparound lounger that would abide no other posture. "Are you sure we can afford that deal we struck?"
"It's under control."
"You know they have something planned."
"Yeah, but we have a Wookiee."
Han tipped his counterfeit horns toward Chewbacca, who was out in the theater enduring Sly's sales pitch as they tried to size him up. He had dyed a red streak over his shoulder. A Wookiee could do little to disguise himself except change his markings. Chewbacca endured no more than 5 seconds of the squib's harangue, then bared his fangs and raised a foot, sending all 3 scrambling for cover.
"See? No problem."
C-3PO, whose disguise consisted of a false green patina, watched the exchange from several meters away. Han and Leia spent the next few minutes trying to pick out the watch commander's backup. It was not difficult. Predictably, they had stationed themselves in pairs on opposite sides of the chamber, wearing nondescript tunics and dreary business tabards in a crowd that favored parvenu flamboyant, thug crass, or Tatooine tattered. Han also found the black-haired man who had tried to sell them the holocube of the boy podracer, standing not too far from the Imperial commander at the front of the crowd. Precisely on the hour, a stout human woman with pale skin and almond eyes and a long tail of braided black hair stepped through the holographic cityscape at the back of the stage. She waited for the room to quiet, then glided forward in a slinky stride that had lost none of its poise or grace, despite the 40 kilograms she had added since her dancing days. In a voice roughened by hubba smoke, she welcomed the bidders to the auction and introduced herself as Mawbo Kem, drawing a laugh by commenting that of course the males in the audience knew that already. When the theater grew quiet again, Mawbo announced that she would start the auction with a bang. Exactly on cue, the 4-armed Quadro G, who had served Han and Leia earlier, stepped forward with the day's first offering cradled in her 4 hands. An instant later, a giant hologram of the featured item appeared beneath the ceiling. To Han's surprise,
It was the hollow cube of the young pod racer. Several off-worlders began to boo and hiss. The locals shouted them down and cheered even more loudly, and almost instantly the theater erupted into a tumult of cheering and jeering, a little too heartfelt to be good-natured. A single muffled click sounded from the comlink in Han's pocket, Sly confirming that he should go ahead with their side deal. Han answered with a double click. Go ahead. Wonderful, Leia grumbled. Wake me when we get to twilight, sometime around midnight. Despite her tone, her eyes were fixed on the hologram above the stage. Han had to turn away to hide his smile. On the stage, Celia was using her two upper arms to hold the holocube above her head, and parading along the perimeter of the stage in her haughty dancer's stride. Mabo said,
As you can see, this is the same cube displayed this morning in booth 12. It's a one-of-a-kind original holograph of the only human pod racer ever to win the Bunta Eve Classic, taken 4 decades ago, and now offered at auction by the pilot's best friend, Kitster Benai.
When the audience failed to erupt in skeptical jeers, Han said,
I can't believe they're buying this. There's an old racetrack just outside town. The locals ought to know humans can't pilot pod racers.
The dark-haired man who was offering the holocube, Kitster Benai, stepped to the edge of the stage and said something to Mabo. She nodded and, waving him back to his place with a thick-fingered hand, said,
For the off-worlders out there who toured Kitster's booth after his sign screen malfunctioned, the boy in the holocube is Mos Espa's very own Anakin Skywalker.
The theater again erupted into jeering and cheering, and the last syllable of the name was lost to cacophony. What did she say? Leia asked, again transfixed by the holocube. Did she say Anakin Skywalker?
Maybe.
Han cursed under his breath, but kept his voice even as he said,
Definitely Anakin Sky something.
He slipped a hand into his pocket and clicked his comlink once, Sly's no-bid signal.
It's not that surprising.
Sly answered with a double click, bid. Han repeated his no-bid one click and tried to pretend nothing was going on.
Well, at least the name explains it.
Explains what? Han started to say the kid's identity explained why she seemed incapable of taking her eyes off the holocube for more than 5 minutes at a time. But he saw Leia narrow her eyes and decided another answer would be safer.
How a 9-year-old human won the Bunta Eve Classic, Han said. He had the Force.
Mabo finally got the crowd quieted and wasted no time opening the auction.
Who will start the bidding?
She looked first to the Imperial commander in the front row.
How about you, sir? Young Anakin went on to make quite a career for himself.
Han was not surprised when the commander waved her off with a curt gesture. The officer was old enough to have served in the Imperial Navy during the height of Darth Vader's power, and the only people with more reason than the rebels to fear Vader were the officers who served under him.
100 credits!
The bidder was hidden from Han's view by the crowd, but the reedy voice was all too familiar. Sly was opening at a third the maximum Han had authorized, trying to scare off undecided buyers before they grew excited and drove up the price. Mabo's gaze dropped to belt high in the front row.
100 credits from the squib in front.
From a squib? Leia hissed. Our squibs are bidding on a cube of Darth Vader?
Han shrugged, then single-clicked Sly again.
Do I hear?
120.
The bid came from a straw-haired local woman in a tattered sand cloak.
150,
Sly offered, still trying to scare off the others.
What's he doing? Leia sounded more alarmed than puzzled. Do they know that's not what we want?
They know. Don't worry.
A curtsin in patched leathers bid 175, and Sly countered with 180. Han single-clicked again.
Grease pushed through the mirror field and thrust out a smooth-palmed hand.
Give me your palm link.
What for? Han said. I'm just trying to make sure Sly knows we're not interested in the holocube.
Should have thought of that before the auction.
Grease wagged his fingers for the comm link.
Pass it over. You're breaking Sly's concentration.
Thought of what before the auction? Leia narrowed her eyes. What's he talking about, Han? Jaxel. Han pulled the comm link from his pocket and passed it over.
Call him off. We don't want the cube.
Too late.
Grease closed the channel and handed it back.
A deal is a deal.
Leia's jaw dropped. Deal? You're trying to buy a holograph of my Darth Vader?
Anakin Skywalker, Han corrected. And I didn't know who he was. I just thought you liked the picture. You could barely take your eyes off it.
Grease left the booth and disappeared back into the crowd. The bidding was already at 2:30, and now Sly was trying to slow it down, taking it up in 2- and 3-credit intervals. The blonde woman and the curtsin weren't cooperating. You thought I'd like a hollow cube? Leia studied him with a durasteel gaze, the counterfeit Leku thrashing on her back like snakes. Of my father? Han spread his hands.
How could I know?
By then, the bidding was at 260. Sly jumped it straight to 300 credits and finally succeeded in scaring the other bidders.
300 credits to the squib, Marbo said. Going once, twice.
310, the woman said.
311,
Sly shot back.
Hey, that's over the limit.
Han opened the channel again and single-clicked the squib, only to have him bid 320 a second later. He stepped out through the mirror field, but Grease and Amala were nowhere to be seen. Asking Leia to wait for him, he pushed his way down the narrow aisle between the wall booths and the crowded main floor. Of course, Leia didn't wait. She was right behind them when he reached the front of the room, where the large VIP booths, the ones with the hidden doors that opened into the vice chambers in the rear of the theater, sat on elevated platforms mere meters from the stage.
I thought I asked you to wait.
You asked, Leia said. What's going on?
I told him 300.
The bidding was now at 420.
He's breaking the deal.
And we're trusting them with Twilight? The hiss of a repulsor chair sounded from the adjacent booth, and Han looked over to see a pudgy human hand slipping through the mirror field to beckon a service droid. On the smallest finger sparkled a big Corusa gem set in a boxy ring too garish to be overlooked, or easily forgotten. Han started to ask Leia if she saw the hand, but she was already pulling him along behind the front row of bidders.
Forget what's in the booth, she said. The important thing is to rein in Sly. If we end up with that holocube, I'll crack it over your head.
But you saw the ring, right? Han asked.
Leia pulled him close and lowered her voice.
There are a lot of ostentatious rings in the galaxy, my dear.
What Leia left unsaid was that one of those hand's rings, the ring that Han had seen, belonged to Threakin Horm, the immensely corpulent president of the powerful Alderaanian Council. Seeing tremendous advantage, perhaps even a new homeworld for his people, in a union of the royal houses of Alderaan and Hapes, Horm had been the loudest of those urging Leia to wed Prince Isolder. That put him high on Han's list of bad guys. They slipped behind the Imperials, drawing a wary glare and two well-placed elbows from the Watch Commander's bodyguards, and found Sly standing alone in the buffer zone the other bidders had left around the Imperials. The bid was at 510, and Han had to pull the squib out of the front row to keep him from making it 520.
Put me down!
Sly bared his teeth as though to bite, but did not dip his head toward Han's arm.
I'll have it in two bids.
Yeah? On whose credits? Han asked. The limit was 300.
300?
Sly asked, sneaking glances at the adjacent bidders.
What are you, broke?
It's not too late to cancel the other deal, if that's what you think.
Cancel?
Sly's attitude changed from arrogant to alarmed.
You can't cancel. That's a separate deal.
Try me.
The holocube of Anakin Skywalker went for an amazing 1,300 credits. The winner, a shaggy chin go tall in a much-patched jumpsuit, looked as though he would have to indenture himself to the huts to come up with the money. With the holocube sold, Morbo quickly moved on to other items, bringing them out by lots. She did not even wait for the highest bid before declaring some collections, usually the least valuable, sold. When the squib's lot came out, Han and Leia were relieved to discover that their Wookiee sleeper was more intimidating than the Aqualish the squibs had recruited. The Chip Bantha Bone Bowl opened for 2 credits. C-3PO bid 3. The Aqualish bid 100. Chewbacca bid 101. When the Aqualish made it 200, Chewbacca dropped out of the bidding and, growling softly, sidled up to the competition. The Aqualish never tried to inflate the price again. Within a few minutes, Chewbacca was the proud owner of a piece of twisted plasteel called Dune Sea Cyclone, a particularly drab holograph of Dantooine, and a tattered but guaranteed genuine Tusken Raider utility belt. Han spent the next hour of the auction pondering the pudgy hand he had seen. Humans, heavy enough to require repulsor chairs for mobility, were hardly rare in the galaxy, but people of such girth rarely braved Tatooine's sweltering climate without good reason. And aside from Leia herself, who would have better reason to come to an auction of Killik Twilight than Threakin Horm? As president of the Alderaanian Council, it was Horm's duty to gather and safeguard what remained of the planet's lost treasures. A wealthy Bothan bought the last of the junk, 12 glitter glass panes supposed to have come from Jabba's palace, just to get it off the stage. Then Mabo announced they were ready to begin the bidding on the final item, the masterpiece, Killik Twilight. Han used his comlink to call C-3PO into the booth, but left Chewbacca in the crowd as a surprise reserve. If the Imperials knew about the code key hidden inside the painting, they would not take losing well. When everyone was in the proper place, Mabo flashed an alluring smile.
Are you ready?
Without awaiting an answer, she waved a hand toward the back of the stage. Her Rodian security captain reappeared, stepping through the cityscape holograph with his crew. 12 hulking, swine-faced Gamorreans carrying vibro-axes, supported by 2 burly humans armed with repeating blasters. Celia followed, holding on to Killik Twilight's small frame with all 4 hands. She placed the painting in an easel erected by one of the Gamorreans. A tense silence fell over the theater. At just 50 centimeters wide, the moss painting was too small for most of the audience to see clearly. But all eyes were fixed on the giant holograph of it, projected beneath the ceiling. Kitster Banai proved himself a man of taste and refinement by removing a small pair of electrobinoculars so he could look directly at the original. Mabo studied the row of buyers before her, then pointed at the Imperial commander.
How about you, General? Will you start the bidding?
Commander, he corrected. Commander Quentin. My bid is 250,000 credits.
250,001,
Sly said instantly. This drew a titter from spectators and bidders alike, which Han suspected was exactly what the squibs intended.
275, Quentin said.
He turned his head and stared first at the squibs, then at the rest of the bidders, clearly trying to send a message of intimidation. When no one seemed willing to meet his eyes, he looked back to the stage.
That would be 275,000.
Not one to be bullied while standing on her own stage, Mabo fixed her almond-shaped eyes on him and said,
I know what you mean, General. Would those be No Republic credits?
From the booth, Han could see only the back of Quentin's head, but he guessed by the long silence following that the Imperial had not missed Marbo's slight in questioning his ability to pay, and in continuing to address him by a rank she knew to be incorrect. Finally, Quentin said,
"The so-called New Republic has no right to issue credits. It is not a legitimate government. But for the purposes of this auction, the transfer will be made in gold pagots." "Thank you."
Marbo graced him with a clawing smile, then betrayed her anxiety by looking away a little too quickly.
"Who will make the next bid?"
Quentin and his bodyguards made a show of glancing down the bidding line, and no one seemed willing to break the silence. When no one bid against him, Quentin said,
"The bid stands at 275, madam."
Marbo shot him a fiery glare, then glanced down the line again.
"Killick Twilight is Ob Kadur at his finest and most subtle. Do I hear three?"
Again, there was silence. Leia stood and went to the mirror field.
"Those squibs were a mistake. They're letting him intimidate them."
"Give them time," Han said. "No one's bidding yet."
On the stage, Marbo glared openly at Commander Quentin.
"Very well," she said. 275 once.
275 one.
Sly paused an instant, then added proudly,
"That's 275,100 in New Republic credits."
The clarification brought an involuntary snort from a Kubaz on the other side of Quentin. Then Celia, still standing beside the painting, covered her mouth with two hands and tried not to snicker. Her failure seemed to release all of the tension Quentin had so carefully injected into the auction, and the rest of the theater burst into laughter. Marbo smiled broadly. Seeming to find her own courage again, she looked to the Imperial.
275,100 to you, Commander Quentin.
300, Quentin said quickly.
The Kubaz said,
350,
and the auction was off. The amount climbed to 1,000,000, then 2, and started toward 3. The squibs stood by silently, allowing the auction to seek its own level before they began to bid in earnest. The bid hit 4,000,000 credits, and a small furry hand shot up in front of Kitster Benai's shoulder.
"Down here! I have a bid!"
Imala jumped so high her pointed ears bobbed into view.
5,000,000 credits!
All heads turned toward the squibs, and Marbo stepped to the edge of the stage and peered down.
"Repeat that."
"You didn't hear us the first time,"
Grease said from somewhere beside Imala.
5,000,000 New Republic credits. That's a 5 with 5 zeros.
6,
Imala corrected.
"A 5 with 6 zeros.
As all this was taking place, Sly came slinking out of the spectator crowd with bulging cheeks. He slipped into Han and Leia's private booth and ducked under the table. Then something began to clatter to the floor. Han looked down to see him spitting out fun transfer chips.
"You'll want to dump those down the waste chute,"
he said.
"Real fast."
Sly winked and departed again, leaving Han staring under the table as Leia's head appeared opposite his. Her jaw dropped when she saw the pile. Then she simply began to scoop chips into her palm. Han joined her, and they dropped the chips down the booth's waste chute, where they would be drawn along to a vacuum duct to a central disintegration unit. By the time they returned their attention to the auction, the Rodian security guard was crossing the stage toward Marbo, coming from the general direction of the VIP booths. "What's going on now?" Leia asked. Han could only shake his head.
"Probably something to do with those chips we dumped."
He reached under his cape and pulled his belt around, where it would be easier to reach his holster.
"Better check your blaster."